Welcome back to the Schwartz NFL Podcast. This will be the last one that's being recorded here as I'm in Los Angeles. My last night. I'm going to Boston tomorrow, enjoying what is nice weather, extremely hot weather for late October. And as always, I'm here with my cousin Dylan. Dylan, how's it going, man?
I'm doing all right, yeah.
Hanging in there, right? We were just discussing before this podcast that every couple years in the NFL, not every couple, from what I've been seeing since really tuning in and watching as a kid since about 2000, is that there's a wonk year. There's been about two or three of them. Wonk year meaning craziness ensues. We have no idea what's going on. There's no favorites or limited favorites. There's upsets seemingly every week. It's just a continuum. And beyond that, there's just no idea of knowing what's going to happen next. There's no more undefeated teams, and we're after just 6 weeks into the season. I mean, bettors must be going crazy. And Dylan was talking to me earlier about it. Dylan, what's going on right now?
Man, if you knew the answer to that, I'd probably have a lot more money, honestly. I mean, it's crazy to me how a lot of these teams, they look so good for a week or two, and they have a loss, you know, that's terrible at home, or like a team that we did not think would be anywhere near them on the field, much less go and win. I can reference the Jaguars beating the Steelers at home a couple weeks ago, you know, as a reference loss. And, you know, all the statistics about all the underdogs winning, I think you mentioned underdogs were 9-5 straight up last week. I mean, I was 5-9 straight up, so I guess that says a lot about not only the wonk year we're having in the NFL so far, but I guess my own knowledge. But I mean, yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. It's been a crazy year, but I do like the unpredictability sometimes of games. It keeps me more on edge when I'm watching these games. It makes it more exciting when I go and pick these games and look at the games from week to week.
Right, exactly. And, you know, I'm sitting here sipping coffee, getting ready for a game tonight that sort of has big implications, as Chiefs at Raiders. And there's any indication of what's been going on throughout the season. Maybe the Chiefs was a second straight to a Raiders team that has a banged-up Derek Carr and have lost four straight. But I'll get into a couple points to where why I think this is the wonk year and what year it reminds me of. It reminds me of 2008. Now, obviously, we just had a big injury with Aaron Rodgers. I thought this looked like a wonk year even before that. But think about what happened in 2008. Brady and Manning had already sort of become mainstays in the league for the last few years before that. Brady tears his ACL after the 18-1 season, seemingly probably half a first quarter into the game. He's gone for the year. Matt Castle's in. Patriots missed the playoffs. Additionally, you think, all right, Peyton Manning and the Colts will rule the AFC. Nope, this was the first offseason of Manning's, you know, neck problems that would soon derail his career, you know, a decade later. Manning had got off to a slow start because of some neck surgeries, the first of many. Colts started off 3-4, so they didn't even take advantage of Brady being down. Now, Manning ended up winning 9 straight and winning NFL MVP, but they didn't win the division. They lost their first playoff game on the road to an 8-8 Chargers team, despite being 12-4 in a 9-game win streak. And you know why? It's because the 13-3 Tennessee Titans had the number one seed in the AFC, led by Kerry Collins, who was on like his fifth team at that point. Now, I'm not saying the Kansas City Chiefs are the Titans. We sort of saw this coming, at least with them improving every year, but I didn't see them going into New England and winning week one. I didn't see them being the last undefeated team, and I didn't see them looking like the best team in football 6 weeks into the season, despite having just lost to Pittsburgh at home. So all signs point to this being a year that we might have no idea what's going on until literally the Super Bowl, which is good for a team like the Patriots, who we obviously unabashedly are biased towards, but they're not having the best of years. But if they can just hang around and garner some luck, sort of KC losing to Oakland tonight, you never know what's going to happen. Well, but which brings me to my first topic in regards to the wonk year. This will be the second time we do this year. A couple weeks ago, we listed teams in different tiers. Now we're going to talk about tier one, tier two, and then mention some tier three teams. But seemingly this is going to be a harder time for us to do that than any other year because we have no idea what's going on. But Dylan, who do you got in tier one and tier two right now after 6 weeks?
Well, for me, the best team in football I've seen, you know, they lost last week, has been Kansas City, and they're obviously in my tier one. Other than that, I really only have one other tier one team. That's the Philadelphia Eagles, also with a 5-1 record. They looked very impressive. Carson Wentz in the MVP conversation for me. The defense looks improved. LeGarrette Blount is running over people as per usual. The receiving core is much improved. Alshon Jeffrey, Torrey Smith, Nelson Aguilar. Zach Ertz is a top five tight end of the league, in my opinion. So they have a lot of offensive weapons. The defense is improved. And their quarterback is really coming into fruition. And that's my tier one. For tier two, I rank these in order of who I think could contend right now for a Super Bowl. The first team on my list right now is Pittsburgh. Okay. I think going into Kansas City, knocking them off, showed me a lot. Antonio Brown still putting up huge numbers despite Roethlisberger not having a really good season. Le'Veon Bell still producing, still doing what he needs to do to get to win games. The next team I have is Carolina. They started out bad, as we know, but they've really picked it up. And while they lost to Philadelphia at home on Thursday Night Football last week, but they still kept it close, and it was still a contest. Not like they got blown out or anything. Yeah. It was just two good football teams going at, in my opinion. And then the Eagles just made one or two more plays to win in the end. That's really it. I have two other teams in tier two. The next one is New England. I have New England behind Pittsburgh and Carolina, and obviously they lost to Carolina. And I think Pittsburgh just looked a little better than New England, especially in the defensive side of the ball. I think you can say that for a lot of teams in the NFL.
True.
Regarding the Patriots' defense. The last team I have is Minnesota. They've been so impressive to me because they've been rotating quarterbacks. Don't know who's going to start quarterback. Now Teddy Bridgewater's back in the fold, possibly. They have all these questions about quarterbacks, and they're still coming out and winning most of their games and doing it really well. Their defense is very good, and they have a very good corner, Xavier Rhodes. So I think looking at the defense, you have all-pro safety as well, and then Harrison Smith. Looking at that defense, if they can get Teddy Bridgewater back, or even need Teddy Bridgewater, you can have Stan Bradford / Case Keenum. They're already at 4-2. Who says they can't go 11-5? And win that division and win a playoff game maybe in the NFC.
Right. Okay. I kind of like where you're going there. I decided to do something a little different and sort of a cop out. You already know because I mentioned it before here, but I'll let everyone know. I have four teams in my tier one, but I kind of split them into tiny little groups. Yes, I'm talking 1A and 1B. People hate to hear that stuff. But I have the Chiefs and Eagles in tier 1A. Obviously, they're both the only teams with just one loss. The Eagles' loss is to the Chiefs, actually, earlier in the season. Of course, the Chiefs just lost to Pittsburgh. And there's a weird thing in the AFC because my 1B tier 1B teams are Patriots and Steelers. Because the Steelers seem to have the Chiefs' number. They've won in Kansas City twice in the last 11 months, while the Steelers can't beat the Patriots. But then again, the Patriots seem to have problems with the Chiefs. So it's a weird three-way thing going on right now in the AFC. I think most of us can agree that those are at least the three favorites in the AFC at this point. And obviously anyone else would be a little bit of a surprise, at least as we're 6 weeks in. But tier two, a little similar. Except I have two teams. I believe you didn't have Atlanta and Seattle in there. I have Atlanta, Seattle, Carolina, and Minnesota. I think you're right on Carolina, Minnesota. Minnesota, I think, needs to keep Case Keenum in. Sam Bradford has potential, but time and time again, he gets injured and or he just has a random bad game that really derails things randomly. So I think they need to stick with Keenum at this point. Yep. And then stick with Keenum. And, of course, Teddy Bridgewater. It's great to hear that he might be on the way back, but who knows how long that'll take. But for Tier 2, Carolina, Atlanta, Minnesota, Seattle. And then after that, I have teams like the Texans, Rams, Saints, Bills, Broncos, and, of course, Washington. But, Dylan, give me one thing. Give me a Tier 3 team that you think that wouldn't surprise you make a run down the stretch of the season that you have.
Yeah, I have about five or six teams, and, I tried to rank them as I was telling you, but you can make a case, really, for a lot of these teams be ranked differently, and this team to be ahead of that team and so on. But if I had to pick one team that I think could make a run down the stretch, to me it was down to Houston and New Orleans right now. Mm. And I'd probably go with New Orleans. Their defense is a lot improved, and they still have one of the best quarterbacks in the league in Drew Brees. They had a rough 2 weeks to start, especially on defense, but they've turned it around. They won three straight. They've effectively ended anyone's hope in the Detroit Lions. I remember I had them in Tier 1 last time we did this, and now they're not even on my radar. And I think that's really says something about the Saints and how they've responded to this criticism. They had the Adrian Peterson controversy thing, whether he was not getting enough play time he wanted. They put that, you know, they put that distraction behind, gotten rid of him, and they still continue to play good football. And they have a, you know, a pretty decent game coming up at Green Bay. Obviously, no Rodgers, which is why I don't have Green Bay in any of my, you know, near my tiers right now. But if they look good and beat Green Bay, you know, on the road, which even with a backup QB could be, you know, a tough task because Lambeau's a tough place to play. The defense has looked a bit improved, not, you know, anything that's going to, you know, rival the Steel Curtain or anything. But it's a decent defense, especially at home. They thrive off the crowd. They thrive off the weather. I think the Saints going in and win that game. They went 4 in a row. I think they have a couple of division games come after that. And they win a couple of division games, and they're right back in for that division race. They're, you know, really competing with Carolina then, and especially if Atlanta, you know, can get a big win against New England this week. But I think New Orleans are set up for a deep run, a deep surprising run of these 5 or 6 teams I have in tier 3.
Right. Okay. And I like that. I was looking at the Saints because that does make sense. I'm going to go a different way because I'm not totally confident in any of these teams making a Super Bowl type run, which is not exactly what I meant. But I'm going to make a quick prediction, both with the AFC and the NFC, because there's two teams each in one division of one conference. And with the AFC East, I'm looking at, I don't think the Jets will sustain what they had at 3-3, but the Dolphins and Bills, both are 3-2. I predict, I'm leaning towards Miami, although I've liked what I've seen from Buffalo more than Miami. I think either one of the Dolphins or Bills in the AFC and one of Dallas or Washington in the NFC, one each, for sure, to me, will make the postseason. Now, that doesn't mean they're going to do much. Now, I would trust those NFC teams in Dallas and Washington to win a road wild card game more than Buffalo or Miami, who would be one and done, I would believe. But that's the prediction I'm making. Of course, Houston, it's funny that you mentioned them because they have been – they should be 4-2. And Deshaun Watson is really up there. I mean, he leads the league in touchdown passes by 2 touchdowns. It's incredible. A lot of people are mentioning him as a rookie for NFL MVP. I don't quite have him at the top of that list right now. But moving into our next topic, we're going to ask you next. NFL MVP after 6 weeks. Is it ridiculously early to start talking about it? Sure, but at least I think it's time we at least mention it. And who do you got for NFL MVP right now?
I have a choice that, you know, is, I think a lot of people's radars, I think people are reluctant to put him at the top because of, one, the team he plays on, and two, is his position. We see usually an NFL MVP go to a quarterback lately. But my NFL MVP through the first 6 weeks of the season is Todd Gurley III from the Los Angeles Rams. I think what he has done to transform that offense and to get them where they're at now, they had a tough loss against Seattle. They could be 5-1. And what he's done, he's been the cornerstone of that franchise. He's putting up very good numbers. He can run. He can catch the ball out of the backfield. He can do everything you want in a running back. And I think, for me, he's my NFL MVP. And you know, the names you can say that come behind them, obviously the QB trio of Brady, Alex, for I guess that 4 QB list. I also have Kareem Hunt, definitely up there. He set a record, I think, for the first couple games or through 3 games, the most scrimmage yards of a rookie or something like that. He's cooled off a little bit, but I think he's definitely still in the discussion. But right now it's Tyler III.
All right. That's a good pick. And, you know, Todd Gurley, it's like sort of amazing. Obviously, like you said, if Cooper Kupp catches that pass, that was a perfect pass by Goff, they beat Seattle. All of a sudden, they're 5-1, and they're not only 2 games on the standings up on Seattle, they're virtually 3 at the time with the tiebreaker. Instead, you know, they're basically, Seattle has the inside track to the division, as they always do. And you broke up for a second when you talked about the quarterbacks, so I'm just going to assume it was Wentz, Smith, Brady, and Deshaun Watson, correct?
Yes.
Right, okay, which makes sense because that's who I got. Looking through mine, Gurley is a guy I probably should have higher because I have him with Deshaun Watson in my honorable mention list. I got Carson Wentz as my NFL MVP, and this snuck up on me because I considered him, at least when making a top 5 on my weekly blog post, to be at least in the top 5. But it didn't kind of happen until the Chiefs lost, and I saw how much of a dud they did against Pittsburgh. I mean, they laid an egg, and Alex Smith made some plays down the stretch. He didn't throw a pick, so he still has 0 picks. But you look at Smith, Kareem Hunt, I know he got over 100 yards from scrimmage again for the 6th straight time. He joined Adrian Peterson and LaDainian Tomlinson, I believe, is the only players to do that, maybe Jim Brown. But I don't know. I think NFL MVP voters look back at games like that where Kareem Hunt and Travis Kelce and Alex Smith and those players were so outperformed by at least Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell. And I think they're going to look back on things like that. And you look at Brown, Antonio Brown and Bell I have tied at fifth. I don't have them as the MVP because it's hard to distinguish them. But Brown has 700 receiving yards, you know, almost 200 more than the next person. I think that's something to think about considering some of the plays he made in that game. But I have Kareem Hunt right over them at fourth. Kareem Hunt probably would have been second or third for me a couple weeks ago, but that Steelers performance wasn't the best. It's hard distinguishing between Smith and Hunt in terms of, you know, the success for the Chiefs. Obviously, you have Tyreek Hill and Kelce sprinkled in there, but their stats aren't, you know, overwhelming enough to be in MVP consideration. But Carson Wentz for me. Eagles are 5-1. Huge road win over Carolina. He's up there, at least in the top five in most statistical categories. I got Wentz, I got Smith, and then I got Brady. But if the wonk year is any indication, I don't think that's going to stay for very much longer, which is why we'll probably revisit this topic every couple weeks. But leading into the games, not the best week. You know, a game like New Orleans at Green Bay, that you mentioned earlier, kind of got, you know, it's not going to be as fun, for lack of a better phrase, with Aaron Rodgers out. Not going to be as fun, but we'll start off with the game that most people are looking forward to, even though these teams aren't quite as good as people thought, at least at this point of the season. I think that'll change, but Atlanta at New England, Super Bowl 51 rematch. Things have changed. What do you see happening in this game, Dylan?
Well, it's going to be hard to predict for me because of all the wonkiness of this year, but I think one thing is going to be constant, and that's the Atlanta Falcons moving the ball through the air. Stephon Gilmore and Eric Rowe, both, you know, contending starting corners for the Patriots. You know, Rowe will probably not play. That's been stated. Gilmore still has this random concussion thing that came up only one or two days before the Jets game. And he wasn't listed earlier in the week of that game week with the concussion, so it must have happened in practice. So we have no idea where that concussion came from. And now you're looking at possibly Jonathan Batamosi or Malcolm Butler going up against Julio Jones. Butler doesn't have the size of Jones, and, you know,
right.
Batamosi is really only coming out his first week as an actual defensive player. Last week, he's really just been a special teamer / inactive player. So I think the Patriots' defense, especially in the cornerback position, is going to be tested heavily by Julio Jones, Mohamed Sanu, Taylor Gabriel, who's a deep threat. And you still have Austin Hooper, who I think is a very, very underrated tight end in the league. They have two running backs that can catch up the backfield, and Devonta Freeman and Tevin Coleman. So this offense still is loaded. Matt Ryan has not played the best, obviously. He was MVP last year. I think I read something today about his passer rating was down like 28 something points like that, which was the lowest of all qualifying QBs, like the biggest drop off of all qualifying QBs this year. So I think Atlanta's offense moves the ball, but on the other side, this is going to come down to if the Patriots can get Gronkowski involved, because if you remember the Super Bowl, the Patriots did not have Rob Gronkowski.
Right.
So now that's another added factor for this Patriots offense. If Gronk can get free, and they pay a lot of extra attention on Gronk, that opens the field for Brandon Cooks, who I'm predicting a huge day from Brandon Cooks. The Falcons know him well, obviously, because they're in the same division when he played for New Orleans. But I am predicting a huge day for Brandon Cooks. If Gronkowski can get a couple passes, you know, the patented play action over the middle, hits Gronkowski for about 12 to 15 yards, those patented plays that we have in our offense. I think Cooks can get down the field and stretch it vertically. And, you know, you could be thinking of, you know, six catches, 100-something yards, 130 yards, and a touchdown maybe for Cooks. I'm thinking a big day for Cooks.
Right.
And if Cooks can get going and Gronkowski gets going early in the game, I think the Patriots do, in fact, win this game, despite the defensive struggles that they will have trying to defend this vaunted Atlanta offense as well.
Right, and it's funny you mention that with it starting off with the defense, because Atlanta's probably angry. They've lost two home games to Miami and Buffalo, two surprise AFC East teams. They need to score more. They got off to a 17-0 lead last week. Of course, they have no Sanu, and they blew it, lost to Miami at home 20-17 because they couldn't score. And now they bring in Julio, like you said. It was basically Eric Rowe or Logan Ryan with safety help over the top that they used in the Super Bowl, not Butler. Now they probably have to use Butler with you saying Gilmore and Rowe looking like, we don't know for sure, but it looks like they'll be out. Meaning Jonathan Batamosi, this Lions special teams guy, has to start at corner. Sometimes these stories work out for the Patriots, so you never know, but you certainly don't want him on Julio Jones. But it's the offense. This is different because you look at what Atlanta did. You know, Dan Quinn obviously knows Tom Brady pretty well from the Seattle and Atlanta Super Bowls now. They were able to play man defense, sometimes blitz, sometimes not, have a guy in the spy, in a quarterback spy. And when they played man defense, they were, you know, it was tough for guys like Edelman, Amendola, Hogan, even Mitchell to get open. This is different now. Like you said, Gronk is playing. He kills man coverage. Brandon Cooks is so fast. He kills man coverage. This is a different offense. The Brady is throwing deep, probably better than certainly better than he's ever done, and up there with the best of them. I mean, his yards per attempt for a 40-year-old quarterback is unbelievable. You know, they even got a guy like Philip Dorsett who can stretch the field, even though he's not playing that much. Hogan is better this season. And then, of course, they have Amendola as one of their patented slot guys. But this team is faster, and it's a totally different offense than when Atlanta played. So I think Atlanta's going to have their hands full, which is why Bug just ran into my ear as I'm outside here, by the way. If anyone could hear that, it's probably louder than me talking. But I expect New England to win. It's going to be high scoring, but I just don't see how Atlanta stops that, which is it's a different offense. Of course, if I know this, Dan Quinn knows this, but still, totally different team. Totally different team, which is why I got New England. And leading in to some other games, I'm looking at the slate, not the best. Of course, we have Kansas City, Oakland, which will be in the midst of being playing once I post this pod, which is being taped at 5 p.m. out here in L.A. here on this Thursday. But you mentioned two games that are kind of sneaky, worthwhile watching. Carolina at Chicago. Chicago's a little frisky. And then Tampa Bay at Buffalo, because this game means quite a bit to Buffalo in terms of staying with the pack. Give a little quick synopsis on those two games. Where do you expect to come from? Tampa Bay, Buffalo, Carolina, and Chicago.
Yeah, I'll start with Carolina, Chicago. Looking at the records, looking at the teams they've played and the football they played, it should be an easy win for Carolina. But look at Chicago. Chicago's two wins have come against Pittsburgh and Baltimore. I know Baltimore isn't good this year. Baltimore's still a 500 team. They're 3-3. But Chicago has proven they can compete at home. They have that's where they beat Pittsburgh at home, and they took Minnesota to the wire at home on Monday Night Football a couple weeks ago. So, and now with Trubisky running the offense, who knows what could happen? They could catch fire and upset a couple teams and maybe sneak into not obviously a playoff spot, but maybe a decent season more than what people expected from their start. So right. I look at Carolina. This is, I think, definition of a trap game, because everybody expects Carolina to win, and then suddenly, they get upset, and then not play as good. One or two plays don't go their way. Suddenly Chicago wins in a narrow margin, and Carolina's looking like, what just happened. The other game, Tampa Bay-Buffalo, I think it means more to Buffalo than Tampa Bay. But if Tampa Bay lose this, I think they're done. They'd be 2-4. Winston has that shoulder problem, AC joint sprain. He left the game against Arizona last week. Ryan Fitzpatrick came in, did actually pretty well. But when you look at Buffalo, this is a game they have to win. I said a couple weeks ago, they're at Cincinnati. If they want to prove to the NFL, the fans, other teams, that they are for real and are trying to get a playoff spot, this is a game they have to win. They blew that opportunity against Cincinnati a couple weeks ago, losing on the road against Cincy when Cincy hadn't won a game yet. This is now a prime opportunity at home to beat a team that basically got blown out for about 45 minutes and 60 minutes of football last week. So that's my, summary of those two games. I think Buffalo and Carolina do win the games, but I would not be surprised especially if Chicago upsets Carolina, not more so of Tampa Bay upsetting Buffalo. So we'll see.
Right, and that's a pretty good synopsis on those two, because they are, like you said, they're sneaky good. They don't sound great. But, Tampa Bay at Buffalo, that's a weird one to pick for me, I think, really quickly. I think I'm going to go Tampa Bay. I expect them, if they're any good at all. I mean, I think after seeing them for five games, they're 2-3, I think it's fair to say they're not going to be as good as everyone thought they were. Maybe they will next year, maybe the year after that. People always seem to prognosticate that these teams are going to do better earlier than they actually do. But I think I'm going to go Tampa Bay at Buffalo and Carolina to win. In Chicago, I think the Panthers have some things. They have some things to work out, but I think they'll start to get that going. But after that, not the best slate of games. Like I said, it's a wonk here. Everything's muddled. Atlanta, New England's the big one. Kansas City,
Ravens, Eagles, maybe.
Yeah, Ravens at Eagles. Well, the Ravens, first of all, Joe Flacco. He can't play off.
Redskins.
You mean Redskins, Eagles, Baltimore, Minnesota is what I'm thinking of. Sorry.
Yeah.
Joe Flacco can't.
Sorry.
Yeah. No. Sorry. Washington, Philadelphia is a bigger one, that's for sure. But Baltimore, Minnesota is what the one I wanted to get to first. Joe Flacco, he seemed to have his best offensive years when the Ravens had more weapons. Now all of a sudden, they go there, which probably going to be a slugfest. The Ravens are 3-3. I don't see things improving for them. They had a chance with the Steelers. Do you see Minnesota? You think they have a chance in Minnesota?
Just for the total walkiness of this year, everything points towards Minnesota winning this game. That's why I'm picking Baltimore to win this game. I think Baltimore is going to go and get an upset on the road against Minnesota.
Wow.
I think Flacco finally comes and delivers a decent performance, and I'm going to pick Baltimore, and that's going to really, I think, reverse a lot of people's opinions about Baltimore and Minnesota. I know I have Minnesota in my tier two, but I'm picking Baltimore for an upset. And just based off the total wackiness and craziness of this year, nothing makes sense. So I'm gonna pick Baltimore.
All right.
No football analysis needed. Just
Just Baltimore,
I have a
yeah.
hunch.
And that's a weird game that could go either way, obviously. And I could say that for a lot, and that sounds like I'm just saying stuff, but literally that could go either way depending on which offense wants to lay an egg. I know Minnesota has Stephon Diggs, Adam Thielen. They have really what's turning into possibly the best wide receiver tandem in football out of nowhere. I'm gonna go Minnesota, but certainly cannot fault you for picking Baltimore. But now we'll get to the game, which you're right, which is a good game now that I see it on the schedule as I jumped ahead to get to Baltimore, Minnesota, which we barely had anything to talk about with. But Washington at
Yeah.
Philadelphia. Washington at Philadelphia, as I got my Baltimore stuff out of the way. 3-2 Washington at 5-1 Philly. You're right. This is a pretty big one, maybe just as big as Atlanta, New England, considering the Falcons and Patriots somewhat sputtering. Washington at Philly. Who wins this big NFC East battle?
I'm picking Philadelphia. If you remember, I think it was week one, actually. Philadelphia went into Washington and beat them pretty easily. But since then,
Right.
Washington has won games you expect them to win, but they've also competed with other good teams. They should have beaten Kansas City on the road. They had that drop touchdown right at the end of the game. I think that was a Monday Night Football game as well.
Right.
Kirk Cousins has been playing at a decent level, not anything, you know, to be so excited about, but he's playing good enough to have them at the position they're in. I think it's a fair position they're in. I think it's 3-2. So if they go and pull off an upset, which I don't think they will, but if they do, now people look at them saying, now, maybe Washington could sneak in a playoff spot. Maybe they could sneak in a wild card. I think Philadelphia, the way they're playing, I think they have the division. You know, it's going to be hard for Dallas or Washington to upend them in the division. But if Washington wins this game, and I look, the key here is the running game. The Eagles have a pretty good front seven, I would say, and Washington hasn't really shown a lot in running the ball. They have their best running back out, but I'm out for a couple weeks from Kelly. I think it's P. Ryan, the rookie guy from Oklahoma. I think he's been their main running back, like the actual run. Because they had Thompson, who I like as a player, actually. Thompson.
Yep.
He's more of a guy who comes out of the backfield and catches passes and screens. I think their offense centers around short screens and stuff like that more than they would go, you know, run the ball 2 yards at the middle. Which I like. I'm a fan for passing the ball more. But I think Philadelphia wins this game, and I think I'm gonna go, you know, probably about 7 or 10 points, I'd say. I think Washington keeps it close enough, but at home with the fans, 5-1, look really good, you know, playing good football. I think Philadelphia wins it.
And I'm actually going to Philadelphia as well. At home, like you said, these teams are pretty close in terms of one, they're in the same division, so it's always going to make it a tougher matchup for each other. But yeah, it was a close game. You know, it was 14-14 for a little bit in that week one game. I remember there was a pick six thrown by Carson Wentz to Ryan Kerrigan, but the Eagles sort of pulled away late. I think Philadelphia is the better team. I do think they win here. They have a combined three losses between them, and like you said, Kansas City has accounted for two of those losses, but Washington probably should have won on that Monday night. I think they lose on Monday night again here in Philly. So that wraps it up, at least for our week of picks. I hear I got the Cumberland soccer schedule up. As always, we end it with a little quick update from Dylan and his brother Kyle, my cousins who play soccer here at Cumberland. You won 7-0 over Georgetown, obviously last week, and then you went 7-3. So that's 14-3 in the combined two games. Looks like you got three left in the regular season. Kind of just give us an outlook of what's to look at ahead with the next three opponents, really quick.
Those two results we had were pretty expected, although we were up big in the second game. You mentioned it was like 5 or 6-0, and we rotated a lot of players to get more chances to play, and then the whole team kind of, the team that was on the pitch at that time kind of, let their guard down. They were able to, score actually a couple goals in rapid succession, and we were not pleased about that because, it could be big for goal difference. But looking ahead, Saturday is a team that, again, we're not going to take any team for granted, but it's a team we should beat. The next two games would be a little harder, especially the last one in the regular season. That team is a top five team at the moment. The team we're playing the second to last before that, I think it's Life, is a conference game. That'll be our last conference game, and they have shown that they can go and get results. They're only a second-year program. They used to be a very good NAIA soccer program, and they just restarted the program last year, and they were not good last year at all. I think we beat them by double digits. But they've signed a whole bunch of new players, new coaching staff, and they've gotten a lot of good results. And so that game's going to be a little tougher than we think. We still expect to win, but it's going to be tough. It's not like we can just go out and stroll around and expect to win 3 or 4-0 easy. We have to be able to play well. And the polls came out Tuesday again. We stayed number 24. And the MRPI, which is more important to see who gets at-large bids, determines which teams get at-large bids, came out as well today. Yesterday. And we are also number 24 in that. There's good signs in that we're ahead of teams that are ahead of us, the top 25 poll in the MRPI. But there is a couple teams that are actually receiving votes that are ahead of us in the MRPI poll. And so that's why these next three games are so critical. If we can go into the conference tournament, especially beating that last team in Georgia Gwinnett, I think is their name, which is the top five team in the NAIA at the moment. If we can be able to beat them and get our, MRPI ranking up by the end of the season,
right,
then we're looking at, if we make a conference final, then even if we don't win it, we can still get an at-large in the national tournament because we know we'll have to play probably one of those two ranked teams in our conference again in the semifinal. So if we beat Georgia Gwinnett and beat one of those two teams again in the conference semifinal, we should be on our way to a national tournament. Of course, we want to just win the conference and have, no doubts whether, we get in or not.
Right, right. And of course, you're in the midst of your last season and a good season. 7-0 at home, it says. It's been a great year. But, as always, thanks a lot, Dylan. We got some good games. What's up? What do you want to add in?
Oh, sorry. No, I was saying I had an assist ball in that game, just making my individual comeback.
Hey, listen, it's the end of your athletic career. When that happens, it's always time to celebrate and look back. But don't look back yet because you got more games to play and you're in the midst of a special season.
Of course.
But thanks a lot, Dylan. Obviously, we'll be back next week. We'll try to get you on Tuesday, guys. I know this is another Thursday. But, stuff happens. I'm in L.A. and we got some good games this week. Kansas City, Oakland should be on right now as I post this. New England, Atlanta, Washington, Philadelphia, and more. We'll see you guys next week.